I want to take a turn here, and I'd love to sort of circle back on this topic. I want to talk a little bit about entrepreneurship in India, and specifically how education shapes entrepreneurship in India. So, of course, first of all, would you agree that the Indian education system has historically placed an emphasis on getting your run-of-the-mill 9-to-5 job that pays well, perhaps a government job? Do you think that's what the education system has promoted, at least historically?
When you use the word promoted, I would have to agree with you. Whether they've successfully done that, I'm not quite sure. I mean, traditionally, we used to have two types of families in classrooms, right? We had the service families, and then we had business families. And often, it was in my generation, it was highly correlated. In your generation, it's probably much less correlated. The business families did not expect their students to get high marks. They did not expect them to compete for that funnel. And often we used to think it was because they had the money, but really it was because they were building other capacities as well. They were building capacities for relationship building. They were building capacities for sale, for managing partnerships. They were building capacities for risk taking. I mean, it is a risk, right? When you say, I'm not going to try to be the topper in the class. That's a risky position to take. And what is business? By definition, it is the taking on of risk for returns. Right? So, yeah, so you're absolutely right. The Indian system did not promote it, but it did not disable it either. You had another part to this question, which I haven't answered. Could you ask that again?
So you mentioned that, of course, Indian education system has not promoted risk taking. How does that conservatism sort of manifest itself right now? Where are those spaces that you see that, of course, there's this divide between families who attend normal education, and there's that background that plays into the conservatism on the conservatism in and risk taking. But is there some what are those spaces in education itself that sort of promotes that, hey, like you should be more conservative towards, you can't just go and start a business, you can't just go and solve a problem. Where is this happening?
You know where it's happening? Tier 2 engineering schools. 45 to 54-ish is the number I remember. I went into some schools, engineering schools, on the outskirts of Jaipur, some in Maharashtra somewhere. And then I spoke to some faculty I was training, and they're saying at least a third, maybe even a half of our students want to run startups. It's amazing. The entrepreneurial energy in India is amazing. So, to answer the first part of your question, what was the path in the traditional system towards entrepreneurship? It was through disappointment, failure, angst, hurt, a lot of misery, 2 or 3 years of everybody saying, Sharma ji ka beta, and what is your son doing? Because it doesn't seem to have a role. You see? The need for role as identity is critical. You have a job role, you have a job title, you have a business card. At one stage, you have a provident fund account from a generation ago. That seemed to be important because economic stability is what we want for our children. I mean, that's finally when the parents can get rid of all that they're carrying on their shoulders. It's anxiety for parents, right? Till their children are economically independent. So the faster you get them into economic independence, what's the word they use? Settle. Child gets settled. That's literally saying that you are economically viable. It's the, pardon my French, FO money. Till you have your FO money, we cannot rest as parents and as teachers. And our job is to make sure that you get to that stability as fast as you can so that you can begin to make your choices from a position of security rather than insecurity. So that is what the Indian education system was geared to, towards bringing you to economic stability. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it maximizes your potential. It doesn't. It doesn't mean that it gives you a path to where entrepreneur, as an entrepreneur, you can be an entrepreneur in a startup, or you can be an entrepreneur in a larger organization, right? Yeah. So where you're picking up entrepreneurial skills in a consulting organization as well, where you say, I will go out and create this new market. Of course, you have to prove your skills before that. You could do the hard yards before that, saying, I can be trusted with your money and your brand. You can't put a large brand at risk just because you don't know what you're doing. So you have to prove yourself in that. And that's a whole other learning and proving yourself in competence versus certification journey. Sure. The startup thing is you're proving it only to yourself. Again, those avenues exist, but they have been deprioritized in the quest for security. And once you are able to, I think it's up to you as a generation, actually, to force, and you are the watershed generation, to say, and many of your near seniors, the past 10 years, and many of you right now, are showing the system that it is possible to create stable growth pathways, even if you venture out on your own through entrepreneurship. This is why, again, these engineering colleges were thrilled to say that about half of our students want to be entrepreneurs. That was a matter of pride for them. Now, that's a change. That's a transition. Yeah. The Sharmaji ka beta is seen as a very conventional person. My kids doing a startup, that's already an emotional transition. That automatically then translates into higher education, college, university, engineering school, but it does not go all the way down to school. I have to admit that it doesn't go all the way down to school. And maybe it shouldn't, right? Because at school, you're still picking up so many foundational skills. You do need that rigor. I mean, you yourself said that rigor gave you that boost.
Yeah. Having that background, like Shreyans said, having that background, that rigor we went through in school definitely gave us a leg up when we came to college. Can't speak for Indian colleges because we haven't been to any, but it definitely was a boost, at least for us studying in the US.
Coming back to the point of incentives aligning in the education system, do you think India is at a point where our educational incentives should even promote risk-taking and entrepreneurship, given that almost 70% of India's population is still below the poverty line? Like, is it even morally right to pursue this path? Because the fact is that despite the standardized education curriculum in place, India has succeeded in building this beautiful machine that produces engineers and professionals every year who are doing great things. We've launched a rocket to Mars that cost less than a big budget Hollywood movie, and like you said previously, students in colleges are already leading towards entrepreneurship in big numbers, despite the current incentives.
That's where the demographic dividend, of course, kicks in, because we have enough and more engineers to do this and that. So that's the good thing. There is certainly, definitely a lot to be said about the rigor and, in a way, the humility of Indian engineering students. You know, the engineering people you meet at an ISRO or whatever, there is a certain willingness to do the junior levels rather than rise to be CEO within 2 or 3 years. And the startup world is a very impatient world. Is it morally right to do that? Absolutely morally right to go into the entrepreneurship and startup world, because the startup world is the world of value addition, of moving up the value chain, and is in the business of creating jobs. What India needs at this point of time is job creators. So for with a slight economist hat on, I would say when we look at the multiplier effect of money, I would want to see the multiplier effect of jobs. As a VC, for example, I would love to, or if there was a government sovereign fund out there, they should be funding things that, they should be funding job creators for the number of jobs they create. Because that's the imperative right now. That's what eases the educational funnel as well, right? That's what makes it easier for the students in class 10 and 12. So yes, it is morally absolutely right to create an entrepreneur. There is another reason, but you'll find that slightly tangential. So I will lay off on that. But it is also, I think, important to create disruption to be able to leapfrog. We have this amazing opportunity. Because again, the minute your batch, for example, comes back to India, you're bringing with you leapfrogging opportunities.
Okay. What do you mean? Could you please expand on that? What do you mean by the disruption?
So what is innovation by definition, right? Startups tend to build on innovation. And innovation is a disruption in the system. And innovation is a disruptor. In fact, in San Francisco, I saw a billboard that said out-disrupt. And this out-disrupt was, I swear, the most San Francisco thing I have ever seen. Like, how, out, what does it even mean? And that's literally it, right? Why would you create disruption? Because the standard pathway, even towards the economic stability that we were talking about earlier, this is right. Just the economics of the innovation that you create, the economics of the engineering that you create, or whatever solution you create. The economics of the solution says that even if you were to go down that stable path of jobs, etc., yeah. you would be working on a certain trajectory. The only way to move beyond this sort of semi-flat trajectory into a much faster growth trajectory, both as individuals and as an aggregated economy, is to create some sort of a disruption there where you can leap to the higher level.
Okay.
Right? So your startup isn't for the sake of innovation. You're not innovating for the sake of innovation. You're not disrupting for the sake of disruption. You're not disrupting for the sake of glorifying yourself as a CEO or a boss man. You are innovating and you are going down this entrepreneurship path for the sake of creating value and scaling up that value addition. What you do with that value addition is the difference between, let's say, an Amazon or a Salesforce, maybe.
Right. I like that bent. This relates to something that I was looking at. I think a week ago it was. I don't know if you know Chamath Palihapitiya. I think that's his name. Sorry if I mispronounced that. He talked about how entrepreneurship is. It allows individuals to be wealth creators, rather than be a part of labor. If you do a job that is that you are contributing to labor, but when you become an entrepreneur, you are creating wealth, not just for yourself, but you know, for people around you and for everyone else, and of course for yourself as well.
Absolutely, well, very well said. One of my professors said that there are no new ideas in the world. So what Chamath said literally translates into the four factors of production: land, labor, capital, and enterprise, and how you combine them to again create value added. Literally, it is again about creating wealth, because wealth is the way you create greater right. value add. You compound value addition in a way. You bring that I called it the multiplier effect, which is a much simpler concept. Compounding, of course, takes it up. You right. choose your
That's a good tagline.
One of those sound bites, right? You choose your exponent.
It's the title of this episode.
Yep, definitely.